I used to sell units. I was happy to sell my units at the Armani Casa for $1,500 a square foot, and that was in 2020. And here we are 4 years later, and we can't sell for $1,500 a foot anymore. You know, we'd be going backwards. That's where costs have changed, and it's a new world, and a lot of people have actually accepted the new world. You know, and you know, because there's a moment there where everybody gets stuck in the pricing of before, and oh, I could have bought it for then. I could have, you know, you could have, but you didn't, or you did, and you made money. You know, I mean, you know, but look what you can sell yours for now.
Good morning. This is Deconstruct, a podcast from The Real Deal. I'm Isabella Farr.
I'm Susanna Cavanaugh, and it's Monday, March 4th.
So today we're talking with Gil Dessert. He's the Miami-based developer behind Dessert Development, started by his father. He's really known for building these branded condo towers in South Florida, specifically the Porsche Design Tower and the Residences by Armani. We chatted about some of his newest developments, how construction costs have ballooned, how it's difficult to find financing, but Miami's a little bit easier, and also his love for cars, which was fun. We haven't talked about cars on the show before.
Okay, great. But first, the news. Bella, I'm going to immediately throw it back to you. So a huge court verdict out of Los Angeles this week. Tell us what happened there.
Yes. So I'll give a little bit of background about the suit and then we'll get into the verdict. But so the Giugiani family, which owns about 17,000 apartments across LA's San Fernando Valley. So the Giugiani family has been embroiled in this 20-year court battle over their portfolio. There are five brothers, and three had claimed that one of the brothers, Haresh, had failed to abide by this oral agreement that split up interests in the portfolio equally. Earlier this week, a jury found that Haresh did fail to abide by that oral agreement. So the jury ordered Haresh to hand over billions in damages and a significant stake in the portfolio. Haresh has to hand over $2.6 billion in cash damages for withholding stakes in the multifamily portfolio for years. Attorneys have valued the entire portfolio at $6 billion, and one of the brothers was awarded a 50% stake in the portfolio plus $1.8 billion in damages. So there's billions at stake here, and it's a huge reshuffling of one of, you know, the largest landlord portfolios in LA.
Okay, so a huge portfolio on the line there.
Yes, absolutely. So then in New York, we had a few punchy items last week.
Yeah, I'll start with LaFrac taking housing court to court. So LaFrac, which is one of the city's largest landlords, alleged that housing court, which is part of the city's civil court system, is creating these, quote, nightmarish delays by basically just automatically adjourning cases by months that should go through the system in a matter of weeks.
And these are eviction suits, to be clear.
That's right. And this is like year four of this situation, by the way. It's changed over time, but we had the eviction moratorium in 2020 that expired 2 years later. And then we had staffing shortages for tenants' attorneys, and that was creating delays on top of the backlog of cases during the moratorium. There is right to counsel in New York, which affords low-income tenants the right to a free attorney. And the courts were then and still are now pushing back cases so tenants have time to find representation.
But landlords are saying, what, we need rent now?
Yeah, that's right. And LaFrac is taking it one step further, saying, this is depriving me of my property rights. Best guess is this won't be the only suit.
Got it. So then we got Marty Berger's new venture.
Yeah. So former CEO of Silverstein Properties, Berger is launching his own firm that's called Infinity Global Real Estate Partners. Big deal, as the name suggests.
And that comes after Berger left Silverstein last fall, and Larry Silverstein replaced Berger with his daughter, Lisa Silverstein. Word on the street is we'll have some more details on Berger and Infinity Global next week, so stay tuned there.
And another CEO move, the head executive of New York Community Bank has left the role. That comes after New York Community Bank slashed its dividend on the last day of January, hiked its reserves to cover office and multifamily distress, and its shares ensuingly plummeted.
So about a month after earnings, CEO Thomas Cangemi is out.
But even more importantly, the bank disclosed, quote, internal controls issues with internal loan review. It said it would need to delay the release of its annual filing as a result. So it said it had found weaknesses in internal loan review resulting from ineffective oversight, risk assessment, and monitoring activities. That sounds a little, that's a bit dense, but we're just taking from the New York Community Bank press release. So the bank expects to disclose in its 10K that will disclose that controls were not effective.
Weren't there some investor suits alleging something similar?
Yeah, same vein. So there were at least three suits. I think I reported this story about a week ago. Three cases filed by shareholders alleging that New York Community Bank issued false or misleading statements about the health of its loan book. Those suits claim that it failed to report an increase in net charge-offs or deterioration in its office portfolio that would lead to losses. So basically, the investors claim that by withholding that information, New York Community Bank artificially inflated its stock. And then when the bank pulled back the curtain on what was going on in fourth quarter earnings, the stock came back down to earth. It fell 38% on January 31st when New York Community Bank reported.
Wow. So where's NYCB's stock at now?
So the bank put out its press release about Kangemi at like 4:05 after the market had closed. And then it disclosed the internal controls issues like a half hour later or something. So as you might imagine, there was a lot of activity after market close. New York Community Bank's stock closed Thursday at $4.78 a share. It opened Friday at $3.45. That's a 28% decline. And then all told, down a little over 60% year to date. And that's as of Friday morning.
All right, let's leave the news there and move on to our interview with Gil.
My name is Gil Deser. I am the president of Deser Development.
So first, I wanted to touch on something that you said at the Real Deals Miami Forum last November. You said that no one is buying a luxury condo in Miami for less than $1,000 a square foot.
Well, it's not so much that nobody's buying, it's that nobody's building for less than $1,000 a foot. As far as the construction, yeah. I mean, obviously everybody has to buy for over what it costs to build, otherwise we can't build these. And even that was a ballpark, you know, number as far as luxury. There's still units you can find in between 800, 900, you know, just under 1,000. But at the same time, the pricing has been based on replacement cost. And developers have to, you know, we have to build to the market. And actually, you know, build to the market price and hopefully eke out a profit in between there. And that's where the problem has been, is that the margins have been squeezed because you know, costs have gone up and the price per square foot also has gone up, but not in line with actual costs. It first started out as, you know, costs went up because of the whole pandemic and the supply chain issues, and you couldn't get stuff, and so that was what was drove costs up initially, and then they started coming down. But then, you know, things like lumber went up by 100%, you know, and so now that they're down 20%, they're still up by, you know, 60% from where they started, you know, so it's still more expensive than what it was, and those kind of relative costs, labor costs have gone up, you know, the labor wages have gone up, you know, and those are things that are not going to be reversed either. And our job, I mean, 50% of what we spend is on labor. You know, the other 50% is about materials. So, you know, it's a big adjustment in all fronts. I used to sell units. I was happy to sell my units at the Armani Casa for $1,500 a square foot, and that was in 2020. And here we are 4 years later, and we can't sell for $1,500 a foot anymore. You know, we'd be going backwards. That's where costs have changed, and it's a new world, and a lot of people have actually accepted the new world. You know, and you know, because there's a moment there where everybody gets stuck in the pricing of before, and oh, I could have bought it for then. I could have, you know, you could have, but you didn't, or you did, and you made money. You know, I mean, you know, but look what you can sell yours for now. You know, so that's where that's everything. Just, you know, raising tide rises all ships, and that's what happened.
So you mean to say that buyers are a little bit more accepting of where the pricing is?
Yes, they're realizing, you know, that this is the new realm, you know, the new post-COVID realm, that everything's kind of shaken out and falling to where it's supposed to be, and it's based on what the market bears as well as what it would cost to recreate such a thing. And that's where this recovery from.
I will say, I feel like South Florida, Miami specifically, is one of the only markets that you can get a giant construction loan right now. Can you talk about the state of financing a little bit?
Well, a state of financing I can't speak to as a representative of financing, but yes, there's money out there. There's definitely money out there. But you know, it's safe money too. These lenders are looking to lend to projects with pre-sales, projects that have shown that they've taken well to the marketplace, projects that where there's buyers who have literally lined up and placed substantial deposits and have contracted to place more substantial deposits, you know, for their units. At the Bentley Tower, we're taking 50% deposits on an average $7 million price point. We have $5.5 million on the west side, $8.5 million on the ocean side. So, you know, at a price point of $7 million, we're taking $3.5 million on average, again, deposits from people. That's a lot of money to hold up for the three years of construction, you know. So that shows that the buyer's real. This is not a flipper. In my case, he's not an investor. He's a guy who really loves the apartment and wants it, and wants it so much that he's willing to take $3.5 million out of his bank and put it in mine until the apartment's ready.
Do you think this is something that struck me when I was there? And I've only been, you know, I went to Miami for the first time in November, so I can't really speak to what it was like before. But the cranes everywhere really struck me. The construction boom, and a lot of this was planning, you know, either well before COVID or during COVID. But do you think that there is a potential for oversupply in the future? Do you think that there are too many projects being built?
There might have been oversupply before COVID, but then COVID cleaned it all up, you know, and then demand actually matched supply, or even demand overcame supply when COVID happened here. That wave happened, and now we're you know, in the bottom part, but it's still, again, the tide is still up. There's still people here. There's more people moving here all the time, really. We feel it, we see it, we hear it, you know, and so that's great. That's great for us. And that's why I think that, you know, Florida in general is going to be an ever expanding market, you know, and as the political shifts happen in this country, you're going to see a lot of people moving for those reasons. You know, I hear we have a lot of Californians that we used to never sell to Californians before. And now they're moving over, saying we can't live there anymore. So that's the good, the good of what's happening here. I think that the Florida is in and of itself, and Miami, of course, being the, you know, the head of the fish here. It's one of those things where you know, people, there's a shift, a population shift, and we are on the fortunate end of it. Texas as well is on the fortunate end of it too. Right? A lot of people are moving there. They're opening more factories there. We're missing that end of it. You know, I wish that that Elon Musk would come here for some gigafactory of some sort, you know, so we can bring that kind of work base also here as well. But so we're missing on that side of it, people. But at the end of the day, they're coming here because it's beautiful. We're in a great taxable environment, and it's a great place to live, you know.
So you touched on the Bentley before, and I wanted to talk about that. Tell me about the pre-sales there. Who are your kind of buyers so far? Who are potential buyers? Are they foreign, domestic? You said you've had interest from California.
No, we've had buyers from California. We're 70% domestic right now, 30% international from you name it. I mean, South America, of course, we have our Brazilians. We have some from Mexico, you know. But what I'm saying, we have today, I think the number is 87 sales. So we're just at 50%, just at 40% rather, or 42%, somewhere around there. So when I say that they're, you know, 30% of those sales, 20 buyers are from here, 20 buyers from there. What we're in a really niche market, you know, so it's a very niche product what we have. But we're getting that general, if you took a slice of cheese in Miami and cut it, we're getting that same group of buyers that are going everywhere. It's just we're getting the upper echelon of those buyers.
For anyone that's not familiar, can you talk a little bit about the Bentley Project?
Sure. Well, the Bentley Project is, it's a follow-up to our home run success, the Porsche Design Tower. Which has become worldwide known for its Deservator, which is a car lift system that brings you inside your vehicle to your garage, which is adjacent to your apartment. So the follow up to that, we didn't make mistakes at Porsche, but as you know, even when Porsche comes out with a car this year and then comes out with a better car the next year, it's always better. So we have a better mousetrap, if you will. Now we've come out with a better system, and we partnered up with Bentley this time. Part of the negative that we got feedback from Porsche was it was very masculine. It was a black monolithic tower, very masculine inside. And so and part of the positive feedback we got on the Armani was that it was designed for, you know, really aimed towards more feminine, et cetera, et cetera. So at Bentley, we found that perfect mix, you know, that perfect mix of having that really elegant design that applies to both men and women. And really, because, you know, when you get into these car brands, everybody thinks, oh, it's a car building, it's all for men. And so we really amenitized the place big time for women, from hair salons with nail places, and, you know, the places to get your hair washed and blown and everything. We have a pet spa. The building is 216 units. We have three unit types of the ocean fronts are one type, and the intracoastal is the other type. On the ocean front, we have a 4-car garage adjacent to your apartment. So the Deservator will pull you up, push you into your garage, and you take 2 steps to your front door. As you'll open the front door, we have a swimming pool on your balcony, and it's visible from your foyer. So you'll come out of the elevator and you'll see the swimming pool and the ocean in the background beyond. We have and we are out looking for financing. We've started construction. We're starting on the foundations because it's a long lead time, the foundation. So we're starting without a construction loan, but we're very confident we're going to get one. The lenders have shown a lot of interest, and so we just haven't, you know, picked our dancing partner yet.
Would you take your kind of time on that to see if rates come down a little bit, or are you kind of a little bit agnostic there?
It's, you know, it's the rates that the deals that you do on these construction loans are a margin above a floating rate. So rates up, rates down, it's going to be what it's going to be. We're watching the forward curves, of course, and we know. And so, but, and we're looking to, also the other reason we haven't started borrowing the money today is we're looking to borrow the money for the least amount of time possible. You know, if I can start now and get the foundation under my belt and save myself, you know, 6-8 months of interest, that could be a large amount of money. So, you know, that's where, you know, we're timing, you know, we're playing it right, I think, as we do, and, you know, and it works out.
So I wanted to talk about a story that we had about the Bentley, I guess a week or so ago, about Billy McFarland. He was buying a unit at the Bentley and is offering 1 month a year to in the building to anyone who has a, you know, $1 million ticket to round two of Fyre Festival. Did you know that he was?
I didn't know. No, this whole thing got blown out, but it's okay. You know, publicity is good in any which way. He came in there telling us he's going to buy a unit, and he wanted to buy a unit, and I'll help promote you. I'll bring you my people. You know, and that's kind of where it started from. And then he announced his announcement. You know, and then things have since fizzled out, I think, at least on our side. You know, and so yeah, because once we realized that was what he wanted to do, we explained to him, you're not really, the condo docs don't allow for it. You're not really allowed to do that idea. Although it's a great idea, you're not allowed to do it. And I appreciate that, you know, you wanted to do it here. I guess we're that cool. But, you know, that will help him sell tickets to his stuff, I guess. You know, it couldn't be done the way he wanted to do it. And so, you know, it's kind of fizzled out since then.
So I wanted to touch on another one of your projects, the Intracoastal Mall project in North Miami Beach, a huge development. What's the status there?
We got the project approved as an overall project. We have to, in order to free up the site to do all this massive construction that we have there, we have to move tenants around because we have some long-term tenants there. So you're going to have big box retail vertical. I believe it's 4 stories. We're going to have 4 stores where you drive up the parking in front of that store.
Oh, interesting.
So if you wanted to go to, so you want, there'll be a TJ Maxx there, but, you know, and so in the TJ Maxx store will be, I think, on the 3rd floor. You'll be able to drive up to the 3rd floor and you walk out of your car, covered parking, into the TJ Maxx.
A vertical strip mall.
Well, it's you know, I'm not the first to do it. It's on 5th in Washington right now, 5th and Alton, I think they have something like that. So that's what we're doing. But we have to, the idea is to, yeah, move those huge big box tenants that we have long-term leases with into the vertical building and then clear up the land in order to erase what's there and start going.
So I was rereading, you did an interview for The Closing for our magazine in 2021, and in it you said you own the best piece of dirt in the entire U.S. today in Sunny Isles Beach. Is there a development or piece of land in the U.S. that you're like, I wish I owned that. I wish I had done that. I wish I had that.
A development? No. Homes, certain homes, yes. Certain homes, I would say yes. A development? I wish I had that. I can't say no. Of course, there's other great sites out there in the world. You know, I buy every great site that I see. I mean, if I like it that much, I mean, you know what we bought in Hillsborough, right? You know the project I'm doing up there. I'm doing the Rosewood Residences in Hillsborough. And that's going to be spectacular. I don't know if you've ever been to Hillsborough Beach. That sand over there, you go walking on that, it's like you want to eat that sand. It's the nicest, it's better than anything you've ever seen in the Bahamas. The beach there is amazing. And we have 12 acres on the ocean. And that, so, you know, so I saw that site. I fell in love with it. I bought it in 72 hours. You know, I didn't even see it. Yeah, I didn't even see it online. I saw it online. I didn't even see it in real life. So, you know, but that's how, when you see something you like and you know it's a good deal, you jump on it. But as far as oceanfront real estate in the United States today, no, I think I still got the best thing going. So Sunny Isles is the best place going for sure, without a doubt.
So, last question. You are a car collector. Have you bought anything new recently?
What's recently?
I guess in the last couple of years, in the last year or so.
Cars are always coming in. Let's see. I got a McLaren Speedtail about what, 6 months ago? No, eight, no, a little longer. About a year ago now. Yeah, I got a McLaren Speedtail. That's a fun car. You know what the car is? You know what it is?
I know what a McLaren
It's
is. I
a.
don't know that one specifically.
Oh, no. This is not a McLaren. This is the Speedtail. It's one out of 106 made. There was a car made back in the 80s when I was a kid that I had on my wall, and it was called the McLaren F1. And McLaren was making these one-off cars then. I think the car was like $200,000, and it was like no, that car was $1 million back then. It was some stupid price, and who was paying $1 million for a car, right? They only made 106 of them. That was all they made. And the whole concept of the car was the driver sat in the middle, and you had a passenger on either side of you, right? And this car was super fast, and it won all the races, and it won all of this. And it was one of these amazing, amazing cars that you can maybe just see in a magazine, never see in real life. You know, I got the chance to see one in real life maybe 15 years ago, and I was still amazed by the car. Oh man, this is the one on my wall. Now McLaren came back and made a retro to this car, where they made 106 also, and they're calling it the Speedtail. It's an elongated tail chassis, and it's the fastest car that they make that clocks in at 255 miles an hour, and it has that same three-seat configuration. And so when I saw that, I was like, you know, I was a kid growing up dying for this car. I got a chance to buy the new one. And by the way, the old one that was $1 million, unheard of money back then, is now selling for $30 million, or even north of, you know, if you can find them. You know, so these cars are investment grade. You know, that's what they are. It's money in the car, money in the bank, the way I see it. But you get to play with the car a little bit too. And so, yeah. So I got that one. I've gotten several Porsches. You know, I'm on this list that gets all the new Porsches as they come out. They kind of force me to buy them. So, but I got a cool off-road one that
You have to. You have the tower. You got to buy the cars.
I mean, exactly right. Exactly. I have to buy the cars. That's what they tell me, remind me every time there's a new edition. So, I got this one called Rough Roads. It's a Dakar, Dakar, Porsche Dakar, and it's an off-road 911. Super cool car. A lot of fun. I have not taken it off road, but I'm actually planning on taking it for the Gumball, which is going to be in Egypt in September. Yes, so we're going to get a chance to take it off road in the Middle East, which will be fun.
We should have just made this a car interview.
I can talk about cars for hours. I bought a Koenigsegg Gemera, which is a four seater, but that's not coming for another 2 years. But I placed a deposit on that. Again, it's just like the pre-construction world, and people. If you ever heard about this guy who bought the sports car and made a few million dollars on it, is because he bought it pre-construction. He placed an order because he saw a bunch of pictures. And then when the car finally comes out, because some of these cars, I mean, this Gemera, this Koenigsegg, it's limited production. I think they're making less than 500 or something like that. And, but the key is that I had a deposit already for the last 2 years, and they haven't even started production yet. So, you know, you're putting the deposit on these cars, and you know, who knows when they're even going to be delivered.
I guess that, yeah, that does give you an understanding of pre-sales at a condo tower, right? You know what these people are.
It's kind of the same concept, but you know, the buyer mentality has to A, be trained to understand that. To say you know, with a car, you're going completely on a whim. You don't know what anything, you know. It's at least a condo, you know you're going to get an apartment.
Deconstruct airs every Monday on Apple, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Or you can listen at therealdeal.com. For comments on this episode or on the series, or if you have a guest or idea you'd like to pitch, feel free to reach me or Susanna at podcasts@therealdeal.com. Next week, we're taking a look at the office markets across some of the cities we cover. Think Chicago, San Francisco, and LA. Tune in then.